morning and welcome to KGNU Public Affair. I am your host, Tish Buford. We have in studio this morning one of the original organizers of the March for Black Women Denver. We have the wonderful and illustrious Chantel Lewis in studio with us this morning. How are you doing, Ms. Chantel?
I am just dandy. How are you?
I don't know if I can top dandy, but I'm pretty good.
Good. I figured if you say it enough, maybe it'll be true, you know?
I love the word dandy. That's just, you know, that's like happy times five, you know?
It is. That's why I say it. It's a fun word. I just like it as a word. It's a good word.
Well, you know, you just have such a bright personality anyway, and people will see that throughout the interview this morning because you're just a ray of sunshine. And I don't mean that in a cheesy, corny, sitcom kind of way. You're just a genuinely a good person, and it shines through your spirit and all the work you do in the community, including your activism through March for Black Women Denver. So So let's go ahead and get right into it. So this Saturday, you guys are going to be holding or hosting, I should say, your fourth annual event in Denver.
And we are.
Yeah, and it's in the midst of some very deeply troubling times and inflection and unrest of racial equality and injustice as it pertains to socioeconomic issues, but in particular, police brutality and violence towards people of color. So today, right now in this moment, we have cases such as Breonna Taylor. We have, you know, Ahmaud Arbery. We have George Floyd, Rashard Jackson. How is March for Black Women absorbing all of this right now, and how do they tend to speak to it in the community through their form of activism?
You know, so I appreciate you asking that question. Actually, right now I am at the Breonna Taylor action, and I have to take a pause here because one of the original organizers of the March for Black Women is actually right here, and I think it would just be dope to hear from her and to say hello to her because she's right here. Her name is Karen, and I just think it's a great opportunity for us to just like stop and take a pause and like pay our honor and our respects to someone who had a vision and took the time to execute on that vision. So if it would be okay with you, if I could just pass the phone to her just so she could say hello and you can hear a bit from her and then pass it back to me. Would that be cool?
That would be beyond cool. Hello, Miss Karen, how are you?
Hi, this is Karen Roberts Grissom. How are you?
I'm very well. Nice to hear from you. And thank you for joining on. This is a very, very pleasant surprise. I thought we would just have the lovely Miss Lewis speaking with us today, but now we have you. So it's you know, twice as wonderful. Great to hear from you. And the lead-in from Chantel wasn't lacking any truth. You are one of the original organizers of the March for Black Women Denver. And we were just talking about the upcoming fourth annual event that will be commencing on Saturday. And I was speaking to her about, the four-year anniversary, but also the timing of everything that's going on with the inflection of racial inequality and issues going on. And particularly, with the Breonna Taylor verdict that came down from the grand jury in Louisville, Kentucky. So tell us how you got involved with the March for Black Women and your thoughts about what's going on with the social inflection today regarding race and the issues with police brutality and violence against people of color.
Thanks so much, Tish. It's great to hear your voice. I just feel like when it comes to police brutality. Well, your first question was about the March for Black Women. I got involved with the March for Black Women because Kenyatta Jackson reached out to find out if I was interested in working in conjunction with the National March for Black Women. And so it was, you know, a wonderful opportunity to get out here and represent Black women and our causes because, you know, the thing is, although we experience the same thing as our, you know, white, Asian, and Latina counterparts, it's a different dynamic for us. We may not have, you know, an uncle who's a therapist. You know, when you're Black, Indigenous, or a person of color, and you experience some of the things that women do, you have to get back to work. There's not always time for you to decompress from whatever you've experienced, whatever's happening to you. And so that's why the March for Black Women was important, because we wanted to highlight that our experiences may be similar, but the consequences are different and very longstanding sometimes. Wanted to highlight that. Yeah. So that's how I got involved, and it has been a wonderful experience being a part of it and knowing such a group of dynamic women who are activated, motivated, and unrelenting in this cause. It's such an honor. You know, it was such an honor to be part of it and to work together. As far as the police are concerned, the police are doing just what the system told them to do. They are here not to prevent crime, but to control and police Black, Indigenous, and people of color, police our bodies. And we are often murdered at the hands of the police, and it's unjust, and we do need to revisit how these things take place. So, you know, whatever that looks like, it can't happen for the next generation.
No, it cannot, and I know that's why you and Chantel and other people are protesting in downtown Denver today to speak to that injustice, because it seems to be ongoing and unrelenting and repeating. And you know, we have been around long enough to see different generations of racism, unfortunately, move itself forward inherently, because the behaviors haven't changed. And they keep being passed down from one generation of Black, Brown, and Indigenous, families and generations of people to another. Because even though our globe is changing and our world is changing, specifically here in the United States, the method of policing has not changed and it has not evolved. Right. And when those two intersections collide, you have a Breonna Taylor situation, you have a George Floyd situation, you have a Rashard Jackson situation, you have an Ahmaud Arbery situation, you have a Sandra Bland situation. So every action causes a reaction. And that is the point of March for Black Women Denver coming to life, and Black Lives Matter coming to life. So these grassroots organizations are very, very necessary for attacking the underlying motivation of this message. And clearly, it's going to continue to keep going and moving forward, because the battle is not over.
That's right.
Yeah. So
that's absolutely right.
Thank you. And Karen, what is your hope from protesting in solidarity and peacefully, you know, showing your concern and your outrage and your hurt and your pain about what Black men and women and Indigenous men and women are going through?
Well, it's interesting, because when the verdict came down, what popped in my head was Malcolm X's statement about how the Black woman is the most unprotected, disrespected person on earth. And it's true, even over 50 years later, what he said. And it's tragic that it's still true. And so my hope in doing the work is that we are able to change legislation. We don't want any of these cutesy little formalities. We don't want people kneeling at our feet or wearing kente cloth. We want legislation to change. We want justice. And we want it to start at the top. The Supreme Court needs to be representative of people who look like the folks who make up this nation. And we need to have it so that our sons and daughters and our children, our grandchildren, all of them don't have to continue this fight years from now. That's my hope and my demand, is that we continue to keep fighting for the change to happen.
Absolutely. And I couldn't agree with you more. And being a parent, and grandparent myself, this fight is not just for ourselves, but it's for several generations to come when we're no longer here, and we want to set that blueprint and their precedents while we're still here, present and breathing, so we can inflect that for the next two or three generations to come and many more. Ms. Karen Grissom Roberts, thank you so much for hopping on the line this morning and talking with me and sharing your thoughts on this very, very important matter of cultural change and societal change. And it is an honor and a blessing to have you on air with us as one of the original organizers of the March for Black Women Denver. So take care of yourself, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, you too. And I appreciate the work that you do. It has not gone unnoticed.
Thank you so much. Ladies and gentlemen, that was Karen Grossen Roberts online
with us.
Hi there, Chantel. We were just giving Ms. Karen her very well-deserved proper exit so we could resume.
Absolutely.
What I wanted to do was pick up where we left off with Karen. And we were talking about how she got involved with March for Black Women Denver 4 years ago, but you were also one of the original organizers with her, Kenyatta Jackson, and Tia Trent.
Uh-huh.
What motivated you to get involved with this back in 2017?
You know, Tish, it was actually really simple. And now that I think about it, looking back at it, back on it, maybe I should have thought about it more to think about this as legacy work. But Kenyatta had put a call out to folks, and her ask was, hey, would you like to partner with folks nationally for the March for Black Women? And I was tagged in a post on Facebook, and I adore Kenyatta. And the person who also told Kenyatta to reach out to me was Reverend Dawn, and I adore Reverend Dawn as well. And I was like, absolutely, you know, not really knowing what I was signing up for, but definitely understanding as a Black woman the importance of making and ensuring that we take up our space in this world and bring forth the issues that impact Black women specifically, and this being an opportunity to do so. And so that's kind of how I got involved, and here we are 4 years later.
Absolutely. So when you said you got involved, you didn't really realize what you were getting into. You, like most people, thought, hey, I'm going to do something for the community, help represent my culture and my race and make things better. But like most things, they take on a bigger nuance. You don't really appreciate it until you get further into the work and realize how much work there really is to be done. Is that pretty much what happened?
It's a combination of things. I think it was the realization that it was going to require some of my capacity in terms of time, but I also realized the huge opportunity that it presented for me to provide a space for Black women to be, to heal, to talk amongst themselves, to be in community with others. And so it was that too, you know, making space for Black women to just have a space to be, if only momentarily. And I also didn't realize how much this would take off, right? And how healing and how therapeutic and how uplifting and how much so many Black women in our community needed this space by simply answering a call to create. And I'm just forever grateful for it.
Well, you know, the community is very grateful to have you and the other women that are involved in this, as you put it so eloquently, legacy work. I want to get into some of the racial unrest and the inflections that are going on right now. You had mentioned just a moment ago that you were at a protest in regards to the Breonna Taylor hearing, and I want to talk to you about that and a few other things here. You were listening to KBNU Public Affair Radio. My name is Tish Buford, and I am speaking with one of the original organizers from the March for Black Women, Chantel Lewis. You had mentioned at the top of the conversation that you were at a protest for Breonna Taylor, and this was in relation to the verdict that came out earlier in the day. So speak to that and share with us how you feel about today's verdict and what it says about the movement that's been going on for the last several months since George Floyd's murder, and what work needs to be done going forward as a result of this verdict and indictment, and how the nation's responded to it particularly communities of color?
I mean, you know, Tish, today is a reminder of how unprotected Black people are. I mean, it's a reminder of how unprotected Black women are, and how justice always seems to escape us, right? That we somehow exist in this world in the absence of justice when harm is caused to us. And in this case, murder. And I will also tell you that I was not surprised. I've spent enough time on this earth to see how our society works, particularly when we're talking about Black bodies, Black women specifically. And so while I'd like to tell you, I was very disappointed, but it wasn't a surprising disappointment. It was just a gentle, or not even gentle, a reminder of how much work there is to be done and how Black people and Black women, what justice looks like for us and how we ensure that justice applies to us, right? And I think that's what the March for Black Women does, right? It's bringing all of us Black women together and talking about the issues, the concerns, the injustices from our perspective and figuring out where we start collectively and who we begin to uplift, right? So when you think about the feminist movement, feminists often started with issues that impacted white women. And I think in this conversation, we have to center the experience of those who are the most marginalized, right? Black trans women, for example. And so that's the work that I think needs to be done. It's like we really need to understand collectively where do we go from here, and we do that by making those determinations together. It's a somber day.
It is a very somber day, and we have a disproportionate amount of people, meaning men and women, Black women, Latino women, Indigenous men and women, who are already employment poor. They were underemployed, house poor, food deficient. You know, these pillars, of income, food, and dwelling were already at a deficiency for these cultures already. And now the pandemic being pretty much forced into everyone's life due to no one's fault but their own, but living in the United States, unfortunately, we are now having to recalibrate our lives.
And some more than others.
Yeah, absolutely. And the reason why I brought that up is because we're at 201,000 people that are dead. Mm-hmm. That's 201,001 families that will no longer have a loved one or a friend or a mother or daughter or sister or brother or a son or a nephew or a niece. That's here on this earth. That is beyond staggering. And we have 7 million people that we know of because, you know, by all accounts, most people believe these numbers are underreported. So we're losing a portion of the Black and brown and Indigenous population because of the disadvantages of not having health coverage, being underemployed, and not having proper housing and proper nutrition.
Yeah.
So this is not yet another, I hate to say it, I hate to sound very morbid, but it's almost a predetermined death sentence.
I think people call it the twin pandemics for a reason, right? Because racism is killing Black and brown people, and so is COVID, right? And COVID, while it impacts white folks as well, not that racism doesn't, we just experienced it differently, it is disproportionately impacting Black, Indigenous, and people of color, right? We know that to be true. We know brown communities are disproportionately impacted. And so when you think about these systems, right, how these systems have historically failed Black, brown, Indigenous folks, it should be of no surprise that the folks that we that we are seeing succumb to the disease or succumb to this virus or to be impacted by this virus are Black, Brown, and Indigenous folks. You think about, you talked about unemployment. You talk about lack of health insurance. You like lots of people are living paycheck to paycheck, right? And all of a sudden, they have had their whole income completely gone because their industries have changed so significantly, right? And what COVID has done is really has shone a light on what we know has existed for a really long time. And now we have to do something with that. Now we have to do something about that, right? We can't continue to ignore it because it's right in our faces. And I think that's what you're seeing, right? You're seeing this reckoning, this awakening that these injustices have existed for so long. And now there are people who can no longer ignore it. And you have folks who are responding in different ways. You have right. some folks who are trying to protect their privilege, and you have some folks that are fighting against oppression and in fighting for liberation. And that's right. just what it is.
Right, exactly. And what do you feel as a young Black woman, and you have a son, and you know he's a young man, and he's you know trying to enter this world with all of these pre-existing conditions. How does it feel for you being a mother of a Black child, particularly a Black male, entering into this world with all of these isms on top of racism that he has to face?
Terrified every day. I'm absolutely terrified. He leaves the house and I am absolutely terrified for him every single day. And I don't have the luxury of just being concerned that he's going to contract COVID, right? I am also concerned that someone might see his Black skin and think that that is a weapon. I am concerned that he might be pulled over for having a taillight out and he'd never make it home. I am absolutely right. terrified more often than not. And you know what doesn't save us? And then this is a message for us. Is respectability politics, because I think that's how we've gotten here. As many folks think that if you are respectful, if you sound like, look like, act more like a non-BIPOC, non-Black Indigenous people of color, that somehow keeps you safe, and it does not. And that scares me, because no matter how beautiful and talented and kind and compassionate my child is, he is not safe in this world as a Black man. And that is terrifying to me. And it actually pisses me off, to be completely honest with you, Tish. And the reason it pisses me off is because I had him when I was 16 and I did everything that I needed to do to raise a productive, kind, compassionate human to be amongst this world. And this world, one, doesn't deserve him. And I'm afraid of this world for him.
Absolutely. And your fear and your terror is justified. And, mm-hmm. You know, part of the work that I know you guys do with March for Black Women is to be that elevated voice for people like your son and mm-hmm. my son, who will be 30 years old in a few days. And he was stopped by police. He has been profiled. And I have been profiled as a 50-year-old Black woman. I've been profiled live. So there's no safe zone there. And the margin of error is very, very, very narrow. And oh, that's why, part of the big reason why March for Black Women was launched, you know, to address this concern and give it an elevated voice. Now, this
exactly.
I know you guys are going to be marching for Black Lives with Black Lives Matter 5280, but there is also going to be a co-op rally, kind of an impromptu rally that's going to be going on with PSL to discuss the latest issues going on in Aurora with some activist leaders being arrested for leading peaceful protest here in the Aurora and Denver area. So we're going to wrap up real quick, but if you could share with us a preview of what the event's going to be like and when it's going to take place so people could come out and join the festivities.
Yeah. So the event is going to be on Saturday, September 26th. I'm sorry. It is a march. We will be meeting here at the Capitol. There will be screening for folks to get screened in terms of temperature to make sure that they are not showing signs of COVID, because we really want to limit the spread, particularly as that is something that impacts the population that we're really trying to draw out and protect and give a platform to. The event that you talked about with PSL, so our event starts at 10 or 9 a.m. We'll start with the screening, and 10 a.m. we'll start with the programming. The event with PSL actually starts at noon at the Capitol as well. And, you know, the importance of talking about how these movements interface with one another is they are going to be talking about folks who were arrested for inciting riots. And I use that with quotes. And I will translate that for you. They are going to be talking about political prisoners. And if you know anything about political prisoners, you know that a lot of the folks who were held in captivity, held for ransom, were Black women. Right.
Yes.
And so I think it's fitting to have that, have the March for Black Women to happen at 10 and for us to join forces with PSL at noon to talk about the injustices that these folks are enduring at the hands of our elected leadership.
We're going to end it there because I think that's probably the best note to end this on. Okay. And just to reiterate the information about the event. Saturday, the March for Black Women Denver will actually be starting at the intersection of West 13th Avenue and North Cherokee Street, one block south of the city and county building. There will be a 1 mile march, which will go to and conclude at the west steps of the state capitol on Colfax and Lincoln. And the programming for March for Black Women Denver will start at 11, and then it will continue on with PSL at noon at the state capitol as well. So we look forward to having you guys all come out and join and support the cause. Please come out. If you're healthy, if you're sick, please stay home. Masks will be required at both events, at all three events. And we want to keep everybody safe with social distancing. So we look forward to seeing you all masked, ready to march, and ready to share your voices. So Chantel Lewis, thank you so much for joining us. And thank you for letting us know what you're doing out in the community and what has motivated you and moved you to be such a wonderful, caring, and empathetic activist. Thank you for actually calling in today. And we're grateful to talk to
you. My pleasure. Thank you so much for your time. I appreciate it.
Oh, absolutely. And once again, Chantel Lewis with March for Black Women Denver. Thank you for calling in, and thank you all for listening and enjoying Public Affair KGNU. I'm your host again, Tish Buford. Thank you for listening, and have a great day. Take care.